Greetings, welcome to another episode of Talking Black. I'm your brother, your host, Aleem Maswar Kente. Very brief podcast because I'm sick. I don't feel well. I actually feel a little bit better. I had soup and I feel a little bit better than what I did before. Like a couple of hours ago, I was in a pitiful condition. Just pitiful. My body was sore. I was aching. Nose running. The works. The whole nine yards. I was in a terrible place. But I drank some soup and I also drank some orange juice, and that seemed to have a good effect. So I'm gonna be very brief because I need to get some rest. I was watching the Cosby Show. And I was in the tub meditating, listening to the Cosby Show as if it was a radio broadcast. And it kind of put me in a state of mind of what people were like when they lived in a pre-television era, when they had to truly listen to the voices of a person in order to capture their attention, in order to understand the human psyche. I believe that's the reason why the older generation are so, they're such linguistic experts. Even if they're not, college educated, they are still verbal masters. Masters of the English language and expressing who they are and expressing what they want you to understand about them in that moment. And I was listening to Bill Cosby and all I could do was just shake my head with shame, but with such great humility and great admiration for the type of man that Bill Cosby was and is. Despite what people may think of him via the news broadcasting and, to be very blunt, what white people say. and then it just made me so upset that, all of this wisdom that he possessed, all this wonderful etiquette, and when you hear them talk to each other, it's like a symphony of voices. You hear Rudy, her little high-pitched voice. Then you hear Theo. He has, this energetic, ambitious, but very pure-hearted young man voice. Then you have Claire, who has an authoritative voice, but it's very sweet on the top of her voice. It's very sweet, which makes all the power that comes through that sweetness, it makes her presence just like a beehive. You know she's sweet, but she has stingers and she's just a wonderful woman. And then you have Bill or Heathcliff, who is playing this man who is everything that all of the other ones are, because he facilitated the household. It's all a product of his imagination. The way his wife talks is a product of his imagination. She would probably, arrogantly argue that it's not, but it is. It's all by his permission, and all by his design that his family functions and they express themselves on a high level. And you listen to the show and he's such a gentle God. He's a God, he's authoritative, but he does not express his authority in a tyrannical way. He expresses his authority in a comedic way to get a person to understand why he is the authority and why they should listen to him. He convinces a person that he has the higher intellect, and he even reveals to a person the foolishness of their own behavior and makes them see their own behavior as something that is strange. Not that he is strange, because he doesn't see his behavior as strange. You know, when he talks in a funny voice, that's not strange. That's him expressing himself. But what he finds strange is dishonesty, and he finds bad words strange. He finds inappropriate behavior to be strange. And I know that seems like a contradiction from what he is in real life, but you know, I believe what is required is a mature mindset. Even the people who believe they have such a thing really need to continue to grow into what it means to truly be a mature person that can distinguish, first off, truth from lie, and also reality from fiction. You know, he's playing a fictional character, but the fictional character was based upon his real character. But of course, you know, he's not going to show that he likes to have sex with women. You know, it's a very censored show. And as far as I'm concerned, and as far as the truth is concerned, and the truth is the only thing that matters, Bill Cosby is not guilty of doing anything other than adultery and cheating on his wife. You know, raping a woman is a very hard thing to do because women are strong. Women are strong-willed. The women who are not stronger than the men that are pinning them down, raping them, that is a very evil thing that those women experienced, when those women experienced them. And these women were saying they were drugged to sleep and then raped in their sleep. But, you know, what happens in your sleep, how do you know? And further than that, you know, why rape? Why was rape? I have to get acquainted with this case because I'm going to tackle this and I want to revisit this in its fullness and get a very intimate account of these women's testimonies, because I scrutinize everything that they say, and I'm not believing of any of the things that they say. I'm believing of Mr. Bill Cosby. I'm believing of myself as a man. You know, women are very temptatious. Women are very sexually desirable from a man's perspective. But women also are very intelligent on how they manipulate their sexuality to get the things they want. And that is something that is not addressed. You know, there's a damsel in distress, a fake narrative that surrounds women. And it's a fake narrative that a lot of people buy into because of television. Television, you know, portrayed women as very honest people and as very, you know, compassionate people. And they certainly are at times. But the reality of it is that women are human beings, just like men are human beings, and they have their tendencies to manipulate. We all manipulate and use each other, but being used is not a bad thing. For people who think that being used is a bad thing, that's, you know, because you're looking at the world from the mindset of you're being taken advantage of. But, you know, a hammer doesn't feel taken advantage of. You know, anything that is being used to fulfill a function, if it is animated and if it has consciousness, then it gets joy from being used when it's being used properly. Now, there are people who are manipulated into doing things that are against their best interest and against their will, and they do not enjoy the effects, and they are abused. However, that is not the case with these women. And we got to get into it a little bit more, because, you know, bigger than Bill Cosby is the trust that black people should have with one another. I was just looking at something on YouTube where somebody said that, you know, if you have black Air Force Ones, you that means that you're a thief and you steal. And there's a stigma around, you know, a pair of shoes just because of the color that they are. And white supremacy is deep. And which leads me into my next conversation, dealing with white supremacy and Kanye West. A lot of you may be familiar if you're listening to my podcast. I have 288 views. I think that's beautiful. I cannot express how proud I am of that number. It is a significant number to me. That's 288. Well, some of those views were myself reviewing my podcast afterwards. I dedicate an hour or so to making it, and then another hour afterwards reviewing it to make sure that it is at least somewhat presentable. But more importantly, at least to find that there's no inauthenticity in it, because I want to be real, even if I'm not perfect. So 288 views is significant to me, and I appreciate the support, and I appreciate your ears. I appreciate your hearts and your minds. I appreciate the things that you think in your brain. I appreciate the thoughts that you don't share and the things that you do share. I appreciate everything about the human anatomy. And I need to get better at appreciating it more, because I'm out of shape and I'm just, and I'm sick probably as a result, you know, from, you know, the cold. But if I was in better shape, I may have been able to beat this cold. You know, but, you know, if you are listening to my podcast, because I have 288 views, then you may know or may not know that Kanye West is a topic of great interest to me. I take an investment, much time into talking about Kanye West, because he is a figure that can be, just my stuttering, it should tell you enough. Just that alone should tell you what I think of him. I think the world of him. And he is a man who is endowed with God power. He's endowed with the power of God. It's just that simple. He has the attention of people across the entire world. You know, when you think about African gods and gods that were worshipped by entities and, you know, tribes, different tribes and different clans and things like that, you know, these gods, they said, were the rulers of the universe, and they were. You know, that narrative is true. However, not everybody knew the name of their particular god, but their god, you know, essentially from our vantage point, we can now say that all of the gods maybe were not the same god, but on a lot of different areas, narratives of these ancient gods converge into a singular narrative, which is basically expressing that some of these ancient gods from these different places in the world were actually one and the same. But when you think about who was worshiping the name of this one particular god, it was only a tribe of maybe a couple of thousand, or maybe in the tens of thousands of people. But when you talk about today, where you have, you know, technology and access to the entire world, you are on a greater scale than the gods of those times. So when Kanye West says that he's a god, you know, there's a scientific breakdown that is behind that statement. It is not an arbitrary statement. It is not a statement made from thin air. It's a verifiable statement. And I will attest to his godhood right here and right now. Do I worship Kanye West? No, I recognize the god in myself. You know, is this an old saying that a fisherman sees a fisherman? Game recognizes game. And I recognize the God in Kanye because I recognize the God inside of myself. And if we all recognize the God inside of ourselves, and we were not such personality worshipers where you put people on a pedestal, and then because you put them on a pedestal, you then hate them because you put them above yourself, and then now you want to knock the pedestal down. And you want to see them fall to the ground. You want to see Kanye West fail. You want to see him fail. Some of you are so evil in your hearts and your minds and so sick. And I hate your thoughts in that regard. I hate the places that people's thoughts can go to. But you're so evil that you would even like to think about Kanye West's death in a violent manner or in some, you know, unnatural manner, a manner that is not worthy of a man of his stature. A man like Kanye West should die in old age, sitting on a throne. He shouldn't die at the hands of some unnamed gunman or some henchman or some hired gun or because he died a broken heart or stress on the mind from being a god but not understanding exactly how to handle the weight of being a god. And you don't even know how to think on that level, and yet you're criticizing the man. It's a very arrogant is not even a word for it. It's so retarded of you. Those of you who think like that, those people who think like that, is very retarded of you to think outside of your scope and your range of capability to try to conceive of something outside of your range. But you, it's okay to conceive things that are outside of your range, because certainly that's what I'm doing now. But I believe that's very much in my range to think about these things. I believe it's in my range to speak honestly and to speak about these things. I have the qualifications that it takes to speak about these things. I'm not criticizing Kanye West. It's very difficult to criticize anyone. Tekashi 6ix9ine, I can make a video about him. It's very difficult to question the motivations behind people, especially when you know yourself. When you are a person who is blind to your own existence and blind to your own actions, and you live in this world as though it's a playground and you can do whatever you want and your actions have no consequences. A person like that, yeah, they look at people and they are in a constant state of judging other people when they should be judging themselves and judging their own actions. Because if you really understood yourself, you would understand Kanye West. Kanye West is a man who makes errors and mistakes. And you are a person who makes errors and mistakes, but you make it on a minute level that nobody even cares about. And that's another thing that aids to your frustration. It's okay to not be known by everyone. 288 views is significant to me. I don't need a million views. If I can reach one person and have my voice and the things that are on my mind by the grace of Almighty God Allah affect the life of another human being, when you imagine and calculate the weight of a human life, one single human life, when you calculate the weight of a person's mind, and then when you calculate the beauty and design, the architecture of the human body, the roadways, the buildings, the structures inside of the human body. The human body is a planet. Every human is a planet. Every human inside of them has water. Every human inside of them has land and minerals. Every human inside of them has storms and hurricanes. Oh, praise is due to Allah. Wow. Oh, praise is due to Allah. Yeah. So it frustrates me when I hear people talking about Kanye West, because Kanye West is my brother. Kanye West is my brother. Kanye West gave me hope. I'm a creative person. Many creative people are depressed people because there is a war against creativity that is genuine. There's a war because true creativity comes from Allah. And there's a war against Allah. It's a war against God to snuff God out and make him nothing. These Marvel movies, when you think the heroes are fighting the villain, they're really fighting the hero. They're really fighting God. And the devil is so deceptive, he makes you side with the devil. He makes you side with him.
because he dresses up the heroes in a way that it titillates your interest, and it speaks to what you think a hero is. And the whole time the hero is fighting Allah in a metaphorical form. And you cheer and laugh and say, wow, they got him. And when the government issues their space program to fight alien invasions, the alien is Allah. Allah is an alien. Alien. A-L-I-E-N. Allah. A-L-L-A-H. And it doesn't take much imagination to see that there's a very strong correlation between those two words. But God is not an alien in some strange, grotesque way that Hollywood has made you conceive of them. Your whole imaginational foundation is based upon things that white people taught you. No, Allah is a human being and a black man at that. So this war against Kanye West and Bill Cosby and the most honorable minister, Louis Farrakhan, is really a war against Allah. The war against R. Kelly. The war against all black men. The war on drugs in the 80s. The crack era. This homosexuality, the LGBTQ movement, is a war, not against white people, because the white government endorses that movement. They fuel the movement. They want people to be homosexuals. They put it in every TV show, no matter if it's necessary or not. The TV show's characters don't even require for a character to be a homosexual, and yet there he is doing something that is unnecessary and unneeded, because they have an agenda to eradicate black masculinity, because inside of black masculinity is Allah, is God, and is the very juxtaposition to the white man's world, the very antithesis, the thing that can destroy white people is the black man. That is not to say destroy in this way, you know, where we should delight ourselves in being the downfall of white people, but the white race is the downfall of itself. The white race is the downfall of its own making. Well, truthfully, it was black people that created white people, but it was an experiment to see what they would do, to see what they would do with their time on the earth. They built many beautiful things and took things to unseen places. Not that there was nothing that existed prior to that. 500 years ago, white people thought that the earth was flat. Today, they have nuclear power plants, iPhones, and the whatever you could say, they have it. Now, when you think that scientific revolution just started when the white man started, what about it, people that have been on the planet for a trillion years? What does 500 years compared to when you talk about a trillion years? You don't think that black people had the ingenuity and the imagination and the fortitude to go after and conquer mathematics and science? You think that little of yourself if you are black, and you think that little of black people if you are not black. Kanye West pissed on the Grammy. Everybody is in an uproar. Every time I turn around, Kanye West is doing something unusual. Kanye West is an unusual man because he's not like you. If he was like you, then where would we be? We would not have the creative evolution. See, Kanye is a vessel for Allah to inspire creativity in the minds of all human beings. Kanye West's testimonial rap sheet of who he inspired, black, white, brown, this, that, he inspired human beings to pursue creative endeavor. That's Allah, God working through Kanye West to make him to glorify Allah, not to glorify Kanye West. And Kanye West is now coming to that realization. He wants to be a Christian, in a true Christian, not just in rhetoric, but also in action as well. And you all made fun of him for that. You said, well, you've been evil this whole time. Why don't you just keep on being evil? You such a sick devil. You're a sick devil for thinking something like that. You're so sick. And your mind goes to bad places. Why don't you just continue being like all the other rappers, Kanye? You could still talk about having sex with all types of different women. You can still talk about the things that we like, Kanye. Kanye says, no, I've strayed away from the path that my parents set for me. I've strayed away from the path that I originally laid for myself. When I first got into music and rap, it was as a way to, you know, bring pride and elevation to black people, not to diminish black people. Not to what, when you associate Kanye West, you associate him with mental instability. And black people want to treat Kanye West like he is a pariah and ostracize him, but there's mental instability in every single black person that exists. It's just that you are not put into the right circumstances that will unleash the full magnitude of your mental instability. But you put yourself in a situation where you are the center of attention and everything that's inside of you is going to come out. All the little evil things that you think about, some of the good things that you think about, but all the little abnormalities of who you are inside of yourself, they will come to the surface when you're under that pressure from the eyes of human beings, because the eyes of human beings are magnifying glasses. And the human eye can detect the soul. So for the men and women who are entertainers, they live in a perpetual state of having their entire soul examined. They cannot hide from human detection. So when Kanye West makes a mistake, is that now the time for you to try and make yourself appear to be better than him? There's whole chapters in the Bible and Holy Quran telling you to not do that. So if you're not following the tenets and the commandments of God from the Bible and the Holy Quran, then who are you following? Because it's not of God to cast those stones at Kanye West. God didn't say cast stones at men who have done wrong. God didn't say that. So who is fueling you? And who is helping your mind to gear you towards a mindset of castigation and of vitriol? Who is helping you have that mindset? It's not Allah. It must be Satan by default. By the process of elimination, it's only two gods that exist in the universe. It's really only one God that exists in the universe, but there is an opposing force to Allah. It is not a force that is on the same scale and magnitude of Allah. This has all been allowed to happen. These tragedies, these things are being allowed to happen by Allah's permission, because this is a divine chess game. If you ever have an existential outlook on life where you say, man, life is strange, it's strange on purpose. The strangeness that you sometimes feel when you're walking and you see things in your walks, and when you are thinking to yourself about just the magnitude of life, that is supposed to have that type of effect on your mind. You're supposed to look at life like it's strange. Because the part that is strange is the part that's unknown, and what's unknown is greater than what is known. So you know the devil, you know the white man, you know telephone, you know TV, you know internet, you know these things, you know Hollywood. What you don't know is God. And it's not because he is not knowable, and it's not because he's not relevant, it's not because he does not exist, but he chooses to remain unseen, but present at the same time. Unseen, but vocalize his existence. He vocalizes his existence. I exist, but I can't see you, so you don't exist. And the knowledge that men and prophets spout are just from their own self. No. No, it's not from their own imaginations that the revelation of God comes from. We can tell who your teacher is when you open your mouth and speak. You can tell where a person comes from when they open their mouth. You can tell from their spirit. You can tell by the things that occupy their thoughts, what they are really. People are quick studies. Very quick. You can understand the ins and outs of a person. I don't need to know what kind of cake you like to eat. What all I need to know is what is at the root of who you are as a person and where you hold your values. And that will tell me all I need to know about you. And that will tell you all you need to know about me. So these other things are all arbitrary and immaterial. What you like long walks on the beach, you prefer cats over dogs. That shit don't mean anything. At the core of who you are is your belief. And the men who were raised up by God to pursue greatness, men like Michael Jackson, men like Bill Cosby, and men like Kanye West, these men it wasn't from them. But more importantly than them, because they are a small fraction, they're the magnitude of who they are is actually quite infinitesimal compared to the magnitude of Allah's elect, which is the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. You all tried to put Farrakhan to rest in the 90s. You wanted Farrakhan to die in the 90s. You wanted blackness and true blackness, because we were truly black in the 90s. You could see the difference between the black content in the 90s and the black content now. The black content now is blackish. It's not even black, really. It's a parody of being black. It's a mockery of being black. It's coonery and buffoonery at its best. At its worst, it's just slavery. So Kanye West pees on the Grammy and says that I don't want to see my people be slaves. I am the new Moses. People say, oh, this kooky nigger, Kanye West, this Kanye West, this Kanye nigger making these outlandish statements, peeing on the Grammy. I love when I see things like that. That is artistic in and of itself. The expression of urinating on the Grammy. He got the Grammy. He showed you his power. He showed you his struggle. I've been struggling in Chicago all my life, making beats for rappers. Being overlooked by rappers, being overlooked by my peers, being called all sorts of things to try and break into this industry so that I could truly get to a point where I can express the full magnitude of my light. So I have to go through so many obstacles with so many people that you think you see. He went through obstacles with Jay-Z. He went through obstacles with all those brothers, but then he went through more obstacles with even more people that we don't even know about. And then he went through all those obstacles and got given a mini Academy, a mini Grammy. When he wasn't nominated, he was winning them. For the ones he's not nominated for, he won so many, you know? Showed you, I can get you a little award. And now the award has no value anymore. Because this white man's world is dying. The things that white people held dear and the things that we held dear by proxy of white people because of our close ties to them. We wanted our lives to be validated by white people. So we did things in desperation to try and get that approval, like winning a Grammy. Kanye West got the Grammy. But then as he sits in his house over the years and looks at the condition of his people, and then looks at the condition of the music industry itself, and then looks at the Grammy, and then the Grammy doesn't represent what it once represented, because before the Grammy represented to Kanye West the highest peak of adulation, the highest award that you could receive, as a young man who is short-sighted due to the fact that he is young, but as an older, wiser man who has seen all there is to see in the world of physical and material possessions, the Grammy means little as a reward. Now he wants his reward to be from his Lord, because he sees Allah, God, as greater than the Grammy Award. Just because you're still in the place that he was in 20 years ago, 10 years ago, doesn't mean that he's wrong. He's just moved along. He's just further ahead than you, than me. He sees the Grammy. He saw it for what it was. That's why he peed on it, because he knew what it meant to you. He didn't pee on it and post it just for his own sick, psychotic pleasure or his psychotic notions. He did that for you, so that you could do the same thing with white privilege in and of itself. You can urinate on it. You can look down on it, so to speak. Not so much urinate on it, because you should respect it. But in Kanye West's field of endeavor, he's in a raw place. Respectability is not the highest priority for a rapper or from a person that comes from that area of realness. Politeness is not on the priority list to a rapper who is not only a rapper, but very much a revolutionary and a visionary. Politeness comes after many other components that have attributed to their success and their praise as what they are. Plus, doing things that are done for shock value adds to the rawness of their performance art. That was performance art, Kanye West peeing on the Grammy. It's performance art. It was a hell of a performance. When he took Taylor Swift, said Beyonce had the best video. See, you all talked about Kanye West for doing that, but Kanye West showed you that I don't care about this white woman. I care about the black woman. And here the black women are. I hate Kanye West. Here the black, he dated a white woman. Well, he dated a white woman because it was imposed upon his mind to see white women as the highest level. Because Kanye West is a conqueror of the highest degree. He conquers that which is unattainable. And he saw the white woman as something that was unattainable, something that was kept out of his reach, and so he conquered her. And I'm sure at this point in his life, he has finally discovered what white women and what white people truly are. And it is making him regret his decision in conquering the white woman. It is also making him regret some of his decisions in conquering the music industry, with hence the peeing on the Grammy Award. I would say that none of it was done in vain. Getting the woman, the white witch woman, the white witch, the woman who belongs to a white coven of witches, of evil people. The Grammy Awards, all of these things were not in vain at all. They are part of his story and they are part of our story. And they're learning lessons for all of us. I've been talking for 38 minutes and I do not want to, you know, I don't want to drain your attention. I want to be polite towards you and the things that you're doing. And I'm glad that you listen to me. If you're listening, you know, I'm just sitting in my house talking to myself, apparently. But I do understand that I'm more than likely talking to the government as well. Hello, government. How are you? I'm talking to maybe some other people. How are y'all? And then I'm talking to the group of people who have chose to follow the things that I say. And I'm very honored that you would do that. And I don't want to belabor any points with you, and because I appreciate your ears and your attention. So I want to thank you. I want to wish you all a very good night. And I hope that you continue to strive for the things that you want in this world. While you are still alive, while you still have a beating heart, while you still have thoughts that course through your mind, I Hope that you continue to strive towards being who you are supposed to be. All praise is due to Allah. Have a good night. Peace.
Greetings and welcome to another episode, a less serious episode of Talking Black with your host, Brother Aleem Oswar Kinte. In this episode, I just simply want to talk about something that just came up that fascinated me or that intrigued me because it involves two figures that I have given a lot of my attention to, as you know, as far as music goes. They are, you know, heroes of mine musically. Hey, is that it? Oh, that looks good. Damn, that looks really good.
The mushrooms are not heated up. She made those first.
Oh, cool. That's all good. Damn, that's good. I want to see this.
You're not even watching it.
I put it on pause. You can turn it for right now. Can you please save me this mushroom? Damn. I'm about to go to my house real quick. I'll be right back. So the two figures are Lupe Fiasco and Kendrick Lamar. Lupe Fiasco and Kendrick Lamar, they are, as far as rap goes, they're in the upper echelon of greatest rappers of all time. Now, if people who know me know that I say that Kendrick Lamar is my favorite rapper of all time. He's my favorite rapper of all time because he introduced a connection to he introduced vulnerability that I didn't see in music prior to him. I saw vulnerability in Jay-Z when he made Song Cry. I saw vulnerability in Kanye West when his mother died and he made 808s and Heartbreak. But the type of vulnerability that Kendrick expresses is it's a mature introspection into matters of the heart and matters of the mind and matters of the soul. It's not looking into oneself and then lamenting or being, you know, emotionally dismayed by what you find inside, but it's really like looking inside of yourself and seeing beauty even in the ugliness of who we are as human beings. That's what I believe Kendrick Lamar brought to rap that wasn't seen prior to that. Same as Drake. You know, with Drake brought a sense of vulnerability as well as it comes to relationships with women that I don't think was ever seen in rap prior to. Now, you have people who are your sticklers and they'll say LL Cool J but I'm talking about like a man almost like on a simp level. He made himself vulnerable to almost being like a simp, you know, But all men, like even the Delphonics, like when you listen to old records of R&B singers, the Delphonics, the Temptations, these men, according to today's standards, were all simps too. And rap was supposed to be a place of pure masculine invulnerability, the pure masculine, unable to be touched, unable to be phased. So Drake brought that element. Kendrick brought that element, but it was from a healthier perspective. And so I have a lot of respect for Kendrick Lamar. But prior to Kendrick Lamar, when I was coming up, one of the first albums that I ever had was The Cool by Lupe Fiasco. And I swore by that album because he was bringing intelligence and different concepts, different intelligently driven concepts to rap that I don't think had been seen before. But they were intelligent, but they were also fun. He was bringing, because he was coming on the Kanye bandwagon. The Kanye bandwagon is a bandwagon of men who are intelligent, but also tapped into their childhood to the point where they are youthful in how they express their intelligence, or, downright childish. Kanye West, Pharrell, Lupe, it's no coincidence that they would form that group, Child Rebel Soldier, because they all were kind of like grown children in how they expressed themselves. They weren't like Jay-Z or 50 Cent or Lloyd Banks. They weren't those kind of guys. So this whole debacle between Kendrick and Lupe, it's really not even between the two people. It's really not even between the two people, because Kendrick is completely uninvolved in this whole situation. It's Lupe who has been hounding Kendrick Lamar for the past couple of years now. He was the one who got on Hot 97 and said on Hot 97 that he didn't like how Rosenberg dick-rotted Kendrick Lamar, because Peter Rosenberg vouched heavily for Kendrick Lamar before he really entered the game. And then when he did enter the game, it's just like when you kind of have a premonition of something. I don't know if any of you really have that kind of experience, but when you see something that's forming and you like, hey, this is about to be the next thing, and nobody else believes you, everybody else is like, well, maybe, maybe not, but then it actually happens, then you become like one of the loudest people in the room to speak and be like, yeah, I always knew this. And that's how Peter Rosenberg approached Kendrick Lamar. And then Lupe Fiasco, for whatever reason, it seems to be driven purely from jealousy, decided to say that Peter Rosenberg was dick-riding Lupe Fiasco. Then he made a statement that Logic was a better rapper than Kendrick. And then Kendrick released Control, and he didn't mention Lupe Fiasco on that song. Now, some of you are thinking he did mention Lupe, and Lupe was just doing what everybody else did, which was make a response to Control. No. Lupe's response to Control was based more off the fact that he wasn't mentioned with his song SLR2, which is really not a good Lupe Fiasco song. There's lyrics in it, and it's memorable because obviously the true Lupe Fiasco enthusiasts and spectators know about that song, but when you think in terms of its, potency compared to Control, it's not even on the same. It's not on the same level at all. And I believe in this feud, Lupe, as well, to, to make these comments that, you know, oh, I'm a better lyricist. Nope. You know, even if somebody did bring it up, you don't have to bring it up as well. And now he's made a remark where he said, yeah, whoever is bringing it up, man, I'll fight you. Like, so Lupe is showing like some very strong psychological weaknesses. And a lot of people who I can only assume that because y'all taking Lupe's side, for those of you who think that way, y'all have psychological weaknesses as well. And you're hoping that Lupe Fiasco is strong enough to defend not only his own psychological weaknesses, but your psychological weaknesses as well. It's not psychologically strong for a man to respond to another man and then be more vocal about his about what he thinks about another man than that other man. Kendrick Lamar is playing the background like a master. He's letting people defeat themselves. And he's using the same approach that all great rappers use. Jay-Z, he is the king of playing the background. At one point, Nas was a king of playing the background. And I think he still is. Nas, Jay-Z, Kendrick Lamar, Drake, Andre 3000. These are kings of playing the background. You might see Andre 3000 in a movie, but even who Andre 3000 is in movies is just him expressing that fun part of himself instead of him just being a person who's attention seeking. There might be some attention in it as well, just because, you know, his own, you know, ego. But then he's also a person who will fade completely away from the background and not do interviews for years and years and years. Then you have other rappers who are looking to do interviews at every given turn of their career. They want to be interviewed, like Wale. There was a time where Meek Mill was being interviewed on the red carpet, and Wale came and took over the interview just because he had that kind of ego. He had that kind of self-absorption, which just looks, just as a side note, Wale's personality in his interviews is horrible to watch. One of the best people that I love, one of my favorite rappers who does the most dreadful interviews to ever witness, just based off of his personality alone. Like, he can't function normally in the interview. He can't be humble in the interview. And this is just an issue of being humble. What is this? You want me to eat it? I want to eat it with my food. Can you put this back in there, please? Don't eat it. I'm about to come in there in a second. I just need to finish my podcast. Thank you. Okay. This is all about humility. Humility. And Lupe Fiasco is failing miserably at being humble. Miserably. He's talking out of turn. All kinds of things. He's making a complete ass of himself. And that's what you have to do. Once you attain a certain level of success, you can't be a person who is always going after other people, because, you know, two people arguing, a man arguing with a fool, it becomes difficult to ascertain who's the fool at the end of the conversation. So a wise man just stays out of it and lets a fool argue with himself. And that is what is playing out in this situation here. Also, wanted to come back to something, you know, that I never got to speak about, but I always wanted to. The Drake and Pusha T situation. Pusha T is also made a very petty move towards Drake. And now, as far as who initiated the pettiness, I don't know. Because according to what people are saying, Drake is very petty himself. You know, Drake has very close allegiances with Jewish people. His mother's white. So there's a streak of pettiness and evil that I'm sure exists in Drake, just like the people he comes from. You know, there was once a line in an old Drake song where he said, my white boy, my white friend said, you niggas crazy. I hope that no one heard that, because if they do, we're going to be in some trouble. And that line, he was basically putting himself on the side of white people, saying that my white friend said that you niggas crazy. I hope that no one heard that, because if they do, we, being me and him, going to be in some trouble. Instead of him as a black man taking the authority and the matter into his own hands to talk to his friend about the use of the word, he puts himself in the same boat as his white friend and then says, we gonna be in trouble, because if these niggas hear that you are calling them niggas, I'm gonna put myself on your side, because I can't really defend what black is, because I'm relatively new to black culture. That's Drake, and that's also, it makes sense why he was in blackface and things like that. He probably did more stuff than that. So, but however, what can't be dismissed is that Drake has been very influential in rap for the past 10 years or more. And he's introduced, just like Kanye, just like Kendrick, just like Lil Wayne, he's been influential to the point where he has created a dozen or more, or a million, of the underground rappers that we don't know about, the people that's trying to get off the ground. He's duplicated himself almost a million times into the hearts and minds of everyone, pretty much, because his style was just that influential. And he changed music, Drake did. So for Pusha T to come and attack Drake in the way that he did, it made Pusha T look bad as well. See, a lot of y'all like to, you know, y'all looked at that situation as like Pusha T was like, you know, getting his gangster on Drake. But, you know, from a superiority standpoint, you know, if you're a rapper who is not doing as well as another rapper, and then you try to capitalize off of making another rapper look bad, try to make that your business, that don't make you stronger. That just means that you're in a weaker position and you're trying to get a foot up. And Pusha T went around the country touring with different people, talking about Drake, happy to do an interview, too happy to do an interview to talk about another man. And Drake only did one interview to talk about, and didn't even really bring it up in the interview. Didn't really fan the flames or anything like that. But there's people who enjoy drama so much that, you know, and it's a lot of really like the battle rapper crowd, like where you enjoy seeing black men eat each other alive so much that you don't even see the fact that in the act of eating another black man, you are making yourself look weak, and you're making yourself look like a cannibal, and you're making yourself look like a person who doesn't have any sense to the outside world. You just look like an idiot, because you're saying to the world that I don't care about being a civilized person. My whole object in life is to be a ruthless thug nigga. And the people who aspire to be ruthless thug niggas that say would do whatever they want, say whatever they want, they thought that Pusha T was the man. But the men who aspire to be better than the expectations of everyone, they saw Drake as being the man in the end. And he was. Because Drake songs are still on the radio and Pusha T songs are not. And for those people who say that Pusha T is a better rapper than Drake, please enlighten me to what your favorite Pusha T verse is, please. Because I do not even know if such a thing exists. We can all talk about Lil Wayne's favorite verse, our favorite Lil Wayne verse. Man, I know Lil Wayne said this, this, and that. We can all talk about Jay-Z's favorite verse. We can all talk about our favorite J. Cole verse, our favorite Kendrick verse, our favorite Drake verse, our favorite Lupe Fiasco verse. But then when it gets to this son of a bitch Pusha T, Even Kanye West, man, I like when Kanye West said, but when it come to Pusha T, and then everybody don't know what the hell this man said that made them think he was so great. I don't, still to this day, don't think Pusha T is a great rapper at all. At all. I don't think he's great. I think he's good. I think he has a unique voice. And from what people say about him, he has a good business acumen. And that might be about it. Because as far as the lyrical content, I don't hear it. Was Daytona a great album? Yes, it was. It was a great album by a good rapper. It's a great album by a good rapper that was really made great by the greatness of the producer, who was Kanye West. Let's not get anything twisted. It would have been an average album if it was produced by an average person, like a Hit-Boy or like one of these dudes. But it wasn't an average album. It was a monumental undertaking because, first off, the very controversial subject matter that surrounded it, and secondly, because it was produced by Kanye West. So you know, Jay-Z, what he said it in the one song with Drake. He said, Drake, look, here's how they're gonna come at you with silly rap feuds, trying to distract you. And if Pusha T was on the level of like a Jay-Z, he would have, if Pusha T really saw himself as that type of man, and fuck a rapper, because y'all think of in terms of categorical terms. I'm thinking about human beings, man, woman, man. As a man, Pusha T would have never sunk so low to get that physical, that involved with another man. He would have never gotten that involved, especially if he had other things to do. He just would have never got that involved. It's just because it's not manly. So, yeah. Peace.